Good morning. Welcome to the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors meeting for September 21st, 2022, 9 a.m. We start all our meetings with our Pledge of Allegiance. We have two great interns we are going to honor this morning. I was wondering if we could invite both of you up to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning.
Place your right hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. I am going to ask the board secretary if she would read the suggestions for virtual attendance. And also take the roll call of the board, please.
Yes. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. And now we'll do roll call. President Pauly?
Here.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And Director Record is absent, and legal counsel is in the room.
Very good. Thank you so much. Just to, for planning purposes this morning, I am going to move item 6A up to right after the executive reports. Next on our agenda this morning is our public comment section. April, I understand we have one person here who wishes to do public comment.
That is correct.
Mr. Gregory O'Connor. Mr. O'Connor, please welcome, and we give everybody 3 minutes for their comments this morning, so
I'm going to
read
this.
The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to read this. On the California Environmental Qualities Act document database and the Federal Environmental Protection Database, there exists an environmental impact report that clearly states the construction of North Trumbull Ponds will create unique particulate matter airborne dust of 2.5 microns, a known hazard to human health and well-being. The soil is unique in that other construction site soil analysis included in the same study do not have the cautions and negative impact declarations. Included in that report is mitigated measures that were made part of the requirement to continue the project. Not only is the Trumbull Pond soil unique, the field was used as an import stockpile location for contaminated soil where such soil was sifted to remove discarded asbestos pipe, solid sewer waste, and methane-causing vegetation in the effort to sell the soil to lessen the cost of export. Documents exist where it can be calculated that more than 1,300,000 cubic yards were exported. That amount of export equates to 65,000 truckloads past our property loaded by an unlicensed contractor under district supervision. Documents in the district public document database include manager's report and board decisions requirements to notify area residents of export activities clearly show the board understood the dangers and negative declaration outlined in the report. I'm a neighbor living 150 foot from the construction site for the last 30 years. When the project was proposed by the board, I obtained a copy of the plans as a registered plan holder and had access to the same documents the board commissioned to secure funding on the state and federal level. The environmental impact report having the title of draft and focus draft are a bit confusing, but the same commission report was included in every federal impact report involving Trumbull Vista Road stockpile. The negative declaration included mitigation measures that were not followed or considered by the board under their watch. I am here today to seek recovery of costs that were incurred and repairs that were required to correct damage made by the construction activities. I have been made aware that my entire attic is covered in dust, air conditioner coils and ducting choked with particulate 2.5 matter, and my swimming pool plaster completely ruined. I continue to look for damage so caused by this construction. I'm hopeful to get a reply and avoid the need for professional help relating to the recovery and protection of future district activities on the property. It's right down the street. I have a copy of this on emwdn.org. Romoland Vista is the title. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the board has been provided a copy of the documents that you left. Appreciate you coming today, sir.
Thank you.
We will now move on to our next item on the agenda, which is recognitions. And I understand we are here to recognize two great interns this morning, so please come on up.
Good morning, Board of Directors and President Pauly. It is my honor to be here this morning. I'm Joe Opris, the Director of Human Resources, and it is my honor to acknowledge a few interns that we had participated in our program this year. But before I do that, I'd like to thank the board, and I'd like to thank senior management for continued participation in this program. So thank you very much. This has been very impactful for the interns to be able to be mentored, but as well, it's a good opportunity for EMWD to seek out potential employees for the future. So thank you. The 2022 internship program began in June and will end in October. We wish to recognize the assistance and insight of the interns. We have four interns who have participated in the program this year. We have two present with us today. So I'm going to give just a quick brief bio of each individual who has participated in the program. I'm going to ask the ones who are present to stand up when I call their names and to join me up here. I'll present them with a certificate. And then at the end of this presentation, I ask that we can all get together in the front and take a picture just to have a good memory of this time. So I'm going to start with Brianna Hemsley. Brianna served in the customer service department. Brianna currently attends California Baptist University and will graduate with her bachelor's degree in business administration this fall with a concentration in management and a minor in journalism and news media. She would like to use her business and journalism background to obtain a position in HR, in public relations, and or business analytics. Apologize for that. She also, during this time, she served during a time of transition in customer service where customer service was going through a transition of working remote, putting in a big system as well that helped them to attract the calls and different things that are going on. So she was a big part of those efforts as well. So thank you, Brianna, for your participation. Here's a certificate of completion. That's not, I apologize. This is it. Thank you. Go ahead. Thank you. Next intern who is here as well is Isaac Mejia. Isaac will be starting his fourth year at the University of California, Riverside. He is studying mechanical engineering with a concentration in design and design analysis. Some of the current projects that he worked on at the district were the cost estimating tool, non-standard details database, the ARI valve addition to approved material list, IP project including mapping, the brackish groundwater desalter brine recovery demonstration, final report, and the Paris 2 desalter tour mapping. So he was a part of a lot of efforts during in our engineering program as well. So thank you, Isaac, for your participation. And there's two more interns who aren't present here today, but they provided great service to the district as well, and we want to recognize them. Another in the engineering department was Catherine Q. Catherine has completed her Bachelor of Science in Chemical Engineering as of June of 2022. She's currently pursuing her MS in Business Analytics, and she anticipates graduating in December. Some of the projects she worked on were to manage and organize all as-built drawings, review and edit board letters and RFPs. She worked on the EOM of the lift stations under the water waste collection system. And then the other one was Manvi Mishra. She was in the finance department, and she is graduating this December as well with a business administration degree and a concentration in finance from the University of California, Riverside. She worked on the recycled water project closures, developer project refunds, reconciling balance and balance sheets for April, May, June, processed work in progress transfers, moving all costs from work orders to construction orders. She was very helpful in also working at the fiscal end year deadlines as well. So we would like to thank the board once again for allowing this to take place, as it's very beneficial in the life of the interns and our organization. And at this time, we would ask that the two interns that are here to come up front and the board to come up front, and Joe, and for us to take a picture. Yeah. And just thank you to the board, to senior leadership, to all the departments that were involved, and to the interns. Thank you.
I'd just like to say on behalf of the board, the internship program here is between internship and youth ecology and IE Works, involving the next generation of Eastern employees or potential Eastern employees here is, I think, extremely important. The internship program especially is where we can give back to the community, help people get their start in this business. As we hear about a changing workforce, I think it's important not only to keep the current intern program, but look at ways of enhancing it so that we can get those quality people involved in Eastern in an early, early stage of their upcoming career. So thank you guys again for being part of it, and I look forward to the next group of interns here. With that, we will move on to item three, which is our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, as you're aware, our staff has continued to respond to the Fairview fire and undertake various recovery efforts. Wanted you to be aware that on September 8th, approximately 48 hours after issuing the boil water order to about 50 residents, we were able to rescind the order upon the clearance of the Division of Drinking Water that reviewed the water quality results that we submitted. We communicated the fact that we were able to rescind the order via social media, a press release, and also contacting the residents directly. We also then embarked on inspecting our facilities in the fire zone area, and fortunately, we did not see any direct damage from the fire to our facilities. Having said that, we have undertaken various efforts to protect our facilities from potential mudslides and debris. As you know, we did have some rain last weekend, and there was some debris that did make it down to some of our sites. So we're in the process of protecting our facilities as well as cleaning up some of the erosion that we saw. We've also accounted for all of our cost associated with the response to the fire, and we've submitted a reimbursement request to the County of Riverside in the amount of approximately $42,000, which includes our overtime for our staff, clearing basically the brush and the fire path, as well as the cost to mobilize the generators, use of the water for firefighting purposes, and other extraordinary costs that we incurred in response to the fire. We are also going to hold a luncheon at the after the next board meeting on October 5th to recognize the many staff at EMWD who truly went above and beyond to respond to the fire. So we are finalizing those details, but there will be a luncheon following the October 5th board meeting in recognition of the employees who assisted us in responding to the fire and assisted the community. The next item I wanted to update the board on, as you're aware, currently under the Brown Act requirements during COVID, Eastern, as well as every other public agency, is able to have its board members participate virtually or via teleconferencing without the previous requirements of the Brown Act. Having said that, the requirements under the state guidelines is that this board has to adopt a emergency every 30 days in order to be able to utilize those provisions. Based on discussions I've had with President Pauly, we feel that adopting such a provision every 30 days is bureaucratic in many ways and is really not necessary. So we are going to embark on an effort to propose a legislative fix to hopefully be able to remove that requirement going forward. Now, we're going to work with the California Special District Association. In fact, we're sending a letter this week. We've also reached out to Three Valleys Municipal Water District, who had embarked on a similar effort, and they started out with a legislative effort to also include the removal of that provision. Ultimately, they met some resistance, and their legislative proposal was successful in extending the period for teleconferencing, but unfortunately, the declaration of emergency every 30 days remained. But now that they're aware that we're interested in pursuing this, they've indicated interest in joining us as well. So we are going to be making an effort for the next year's legislative session to have consideration for this change that I described. Also, I wanted to update the board that this past week, upon a request from the County of Riverside, we have submitted a list of projects for the county to review and consider for additional American Rescue Plan Act funding. Specifically, these projects are in Supervisor Hewitt's district in District 5, primarily in the Hemet-San Jacinto area. I had the opportunity to be at the county yesterday, and there were indications that they are looking at our project submittals, and they early indication is they were going to consider some of our project requests. So we'll keep the board aware, but I just want you to be aware that we have submitted that list of projects to the county. Also, under items of interest of the board, I was at the county yesterday. The event was that myself, along with several other water agencies throughout the county of Riverside, including Rancho California Water District, General Manager, Western Municipal Water District, Beaumont-Cherry Valley, as well as Coachella, all of us were there to provide a briefing to the Board of Supervisors on the water supply and drought conditions in the county as well as statewide. It was well received. We had an opportunity to engage with the supervisors and answer a number of questions, but I thought it was a very fruitful conversation that we had with the Board of Supervisors. And finally, I wanted you to be aware, as Matt updated the board at the last board meeting, we have continued to work with our development community to look at converting our T-meters that are utilized primarily for construction grading activities from potable to recycled water. In fact, last week, staff had a meeting with President Pauly and Vice President Record. We went through the detailed conversation about all the different efforts we're doing, not only reaching out to the contractors, but also working with legal counsel to understand what can and cannot be done under the provisions of the Emergency Drought Declaration. Also working with Public Governmental Affairs to post signage on those grading sites that are currently active to make the public aware that they are using recycled water. And also, per President Pauly's suggestion, we will be reaching out to the BIA to make them aware that given the current drought conditions, we will be making a push to convert those temporary meters from potable to recycled water. So there's a lot going on that front, and we are making progress. And in fact, we'll be bringing back an item to update committee, planning committee, as well as the board in October. With that, be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Any questions for the general manager? Director Armstrong, any questions for our general manager?
No questions. Appreciate the update, and I would just like to add my compliments to the team for all of their efforts related to the fire as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I had the opportunity to be at the County Riverside Board of Supervisors meeting yesterday. Joe and our fellow general managers did a great job. I heard a lot of good feedback from the board members themselves on it. So I think it was appreciated. I think we take for granted sometimes inside the water industry that that we talk to ourselves a lot. So getting out and talking to other governmental agencies about the severity of the drought before us is important. So excellent job on that, and thank you very much.
Thank you, President Pauley.
Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, I have one item. Just wanted to update the board. Back in July, Director Armstrong presented a technology idea from a company called Rescue Live Lens to vet opportunities for the district. Rescue Live Lens and other similar products give customer-facing teams the ability to instant visibility to any piece of equipment through browser-based remote desktop sharing technology. Similar to what Apple uses when you call in to request help, there are camera sharing features which allow staff to remotely view a customer's iPhone, Android, or Windows camera while assisting them to troubleshoot routine issues. So customer service, meter services, water conservation, and IS staff met to evaluate the potential use of this type of software. And after discussion, staff determined there are three opportunities whereby district staff can potentially use these products. One is call center staff utilize the browser-based remote desktop sharing feature to assist customers with basic navigation of the EMWD My Account portal, including viewing water usage graphs, setting up notifications, as well as how to submit a payment. Meter services, through the camera sharing feature, staff can connect to a customer's smartphone and remotely walk them through how to complete a dye test to determine if a toilet is leaking. And then lastly, water conservation, through the browser-based remote desktop sharing feature, staff can virtually walk a customer through the Stay Waterways tab located on the EMWD website, and also assist them with downloading and completing conservation packets, as well as educating them on additional water-saving ideas, tips, and techniques. So staff evaluated various vendors in this arena, really reasonable cost estimates to implement the software, with costs ranging from about $11,000 to $40,000 per year. So what we're going to do is we're going to initiate a pilot test program to utilize the desk share as well as the Live Lens camera share feature. And we estimate the annual cost of these two products is about $11,000. We believe these tools will streamline and benefit interaction with our customers to continue our goal of excellence in customer service. And we'd like to thank Director Armstrong for bringing this idea forward to staff. And right. With that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any comments, Director Armstrong?
Yeah, I'm just really impressed that you guys looked at that so quick and evaluated it. And I think it's another innovation that Eastern gets to be at the forefront in our industry by using something like this. And I think the thing that you'll find is once you start a technology like this, you never know where it takes you. You might find other ways to use it that are really beneficial as well. But I just appreciate that you looked at it and glad that you found some use of it. Thanks.
Well, thank you for bringing that forward. Any other questions for Laura? All right, Nick.
I have nothing to report this morning.
And this morning, Linnea?
Nothing this morning, President Pauley.
And Matt?
I have nothing this morning either. Thanks.
All right. Very good. As I indicated, before we go to our consent calendar, I did want to change up here and welcome our guest. I know we have people in the audience who are waiting for the consent and action calendar. I appreciate you being here this morning, but if you're involved in Eastern, I think this next update's going to be interesting to you, too. So, Jolene, I understand you're on the line, and you'd like to introduce our guest who's going to give us an update on residential household water use. Is that correct?
Correct. Thank you, and good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. This morning we have a guest presentation from Krista Guerrero. She's a Southern California native with over 20 years of experience in the water industry. She holds a BS in Natural Resources from Cornell and a master's in environmental engineering, and has a very wide range of water industry experience. And she's currently an outdoor conservation expert and a program manager at Metropolitan. And today she'll be sharing with us a presentation on the household water use study that Met has conducted. Krista, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you very, very much. Right. So Thank you for allowing me to be here today. I'm honored to present our initial study from our household, our initial results from our household water use study. Next slide, please. So the way that the study was conducted, what we did was we used our Flume devices that were throughout our service area. Flume is one of four devices that's currently included in our residential leak detection rebate program. These flow monitoring devices can be self-installed on a water meter or the other versions also on a water line, and it helps to capture their indoor and outdoor use for different households. So this real-time water use and detection is very useful for the homeowner. Obviously, it helps for leak detection immediately and can help people see where they're using their water. But it also allows Metropolitan to look at a large-scale idea of how water is being used in residential households. There are currently over 6,000 total devices in Metropolitan service area. Next slide, please. So the way that the devices work is that they determine the water use type, whether it's for irrigation or a shower or a toilet, by the water signature. So every item in your home has a different water signature or uses a different amount of water. And it's a smart technology that continually learns those use patterns so that it can identify where the water use is coming from and then provides a breakdown of that indoor and outdoor use. So what we did was we aggregated and analyzed those water use patterns for our entire service area. So we can't see an individual household's use. We don't know, a specific person, but we can look at it as an overall aggregate. Next slide. Some things to consider when you look at the results. The study customers are self-selected, so they do have to purchase these devices and install them in their home. So there is a little bit of a bias there. It is noted that people who purchase these devices do tend to have a little bit higher than average income. But we have compared this data to billing data the company has, and we've noted that the indoor use is similar to the general population, and the outdoor use is slightly higher than the general population, likely because of slightly larger property sizes. And all the household demographics that are included are self-reported. So the app that goes along with the device asks how many people there are, what type of irrigation system you have, things like that. And so we're relying on the customer to put that information in and for it to be correct. Next slide. This is just a map of the devices that are currently installed in Metropolitan service area. So we have a very good distribution, as you can see, throughout the entire service area, and we can rely pretty heavily on these results and say that they cover all of the Metropolitan Southern California area. Next slide. Some key demographics from the households that have these devices installed. The home age is just over 42 years, about 3 residents per home, and an average home size of about 2,500 square feet. So these are not large mansions by any means. So we are right in that middle range of an average home size. Next slide. So the first snapshot is indoor and outdoor gallons per household per day. And I think what's most important to note here is you see that bottom light blue line, that is the indoor use, relatively flat, relatively low. And what you'll notice is that aggregate use is really a function of the outdoor use. So you see it change as the outdoor use changes, and you see the outdoor use change seasonally. Next slide. So let's dive into that indoor use just a bit. Next slide, please. And what's great about this is a sort of a blown up, more detailed look at that relatively steady and flat indoor use line. And what you'll notice is that our indoor use ranges anywhere from just under 50 to just above 40 gallons per capita per day. This is a very static number as it moves through, and it is below and meets the target of the Conservation of the California Way of Life objective. So we're happy to see that we are meeting that indoor standard, or we do have the ability to meet that indoor standard in Metropolitan service area. Next slide, please. This is an indoor water use breakdown pie chart of the different appliances within a person's home and their different water uses. This really wasn't a surprising look because it matches what we have seen in other studies from AWWA or the EPA as well, state studies as well. You know, the majority of the use is toilets, then showers, faucets, and so on. Next slide, please. The outdoor use analysis is really interesting, so let's dive into that. In order to do our outdoor analysis, we did break our service area into four what we called climate zones. We have coastal north, inland north, coastal south, and inland south. And this just allowed us to take some temperature variations and climate effects into account. Those yellow stars that you see are the weather stations that were used for comparison. Next slide. As expected, and what we're happy to see, is that customers do respond when it rains. So this is a snapshot of coastal south, and you can see that for every spike in precipitation, you do see a corresponding drop in the outdoor use, gallons per household per day. Next slide. And again here for inland north, a very dramatic drop in outdoor use during a very heavy period of rainfall at the end of 2021. Next slide. What's interesting to note and good for us for programmatic purposes is that we are seeing a large variation in water use by irrigation type. So you can see that a garden hose, which is the yellow-orange line down at the bottom, that would be what we'd considering hand watering. And then you have the darker blue, which is drip, and the blue-green, which is a sprinkler. So you can see how dramatically different the amount of water that's used for each irrigation type, how difficult or how different that is between the three types. Next slide. We're encouraged to see an outdoor gallons per household per day decrease between last year and this year. So we are noting that people are using less water. We're expecting that to be a response to the drought and the marketing and all of the information that we're trying to provide on the need to cut back on outdoor water use. Next slide. We are tracking the number of days that people water outside, and we are noticing that those irrigation days do follow a seasonal pattern. So while we are encouraged that people are not watering 3, 4, 5 days a week in the winter, we are seeing that amount in the summer months and then a drop down to 1 to 2 days a week in the winter period. Next slide, please. We did look closely at the State Water Project dependent areas since we do have more severe restrictions in place in those areas due to our cutbacks on State Water Project. And so we are noting that we are seeing a decrease from last year in the amount of days per week watering, which we're happy to see. Next slide. Most encouraging, as we showed before, that outdoor household water use that's declining compared to 2021. Unfortunately, we do not have enough data to go back to 2020, which would be the governor's baseline, but we are seeing a decrease. You're looking at June, a 27% decrease between the amount of water that was used in June of last year for outdoor irrigation as opposed to June of this year. Next slide. And we are seeing an even bigger decrease in the State Water Project dependent area, 38, almost 40% reduction between June of last year and June of this year. And again, we believe that's due to the restrictions that we put in place. Next slide. So some of the key findings that are coming out of these initial results, the indoor use is flat, which could indicate a high level of saturation with our indoor conserving devices. We believe that, you know, the rebate programs that we have in place for indoor devices have worked, and we have higher saturation, so we are seeing that decrease in use. We do have concerns about whether or not we may see a lot larger gains in the future on indoor, that we may have come close to our max point for that. There are significant differences observed in outdoor use based on the irrigation type, which indicates for us programmatically moving forward that we do need to focus on irrigation changeouts and rebates in that area and more education on water efficient irrigation. Our outdoor use is dropping service area wide and especially in the State Water Project dependent areas, which we believe is due to effective drought messaging and additional restrictions that we've put in place. So moving forward, if this drought were to continue or other issues come up, including the Colorado River, we're noticing that this is the pattern or the method that we should take to ensure that those outdoor use continues to drop. Next slide, please. As this is only the initial findings, the study will continue through the end of the year, so we will be bringing back to our board an update in the fall with a complete summer analysis, and then again, after the study is complete, we will do a full analysis, and that will be a Metropolitan Service area-wide analysis, one for the State Water Project dependent area, and then one as well for our disadvantaged communities, focus in on that area as well. And we will continue to market these devices so that we can have additional data to add to our aggregate study. And that's all I have for you today, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
No, appreciate the presentation very much. Are there any questions from the board? Director Armstrong, any questions on this?
I don't have any questions, but I also appreciate the update. Thank you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. And again, thank you for joining us this morning. Very, very informational and helpful.
President Paul, if I can, I also want to express my appreciation for Krista to share with us this information. I wanted to share with the board that when we had an opportunity to review this effort by Metropolitan and look at the technology they utilize, the flume technology, we have identified an opportunity to utilize a similar technology to advance a pilot within our service area to better understand outdoor water use and how potentially that information can be made available to our customers with the objective of seeing them enhance their water use efficiency outdoors. And I've asked Linnea to take the lead on advancing a pilot effort. And Linnea, do you want to describe that a little further?
Sure. Yeah, we've been working closely with the Flume Data Lab, which is providing the service to Metropolitan, as well as working with Krista to understand Metropolitan's program. And currently we have over 60 participants from EMWD service area. So we're working with the Flume Data Lab to understand how we can access the data associated with those customers, as well as add to that pilot study to gather meaningful data, as Joe mentioned, to understand how that data that could be available to our customers could influence their water use behavior. Also keeping in mind some of the unique characteristics of EMWD with respect to our AMI data and our water budgets. So factoring all those variables in to really understand how this could be additional helpful information for our customers.
Very good. Again, thank you for the presentation. We will now go back to our agenda, and we're at item four, which is our consent calendar. Director Slauson, I understand you have two items you'd like to pull for separate consideration due to a conflict.
Yes, items F and K.
F and
Frank and
K. Mr. President, if I may, a couple of things. One, unless anybody else wishes to pull those items for discussion, the vote can be taken and the record will reflect the recusal as soon as Director Slauson states the reasons.
Okay.
Secondly, we will need three votes, three remaining votes, to pass any of those items. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Do we have any other directors? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead and make your reason for...
I've done work for Kaufman & Broad, KB Home.
Okay.
And I can make the motion to approve all items except F and K.
Let's do that. I want to make sure none of the other directors have any questions or comments. I do have a question on one item, but before that, any other directors have any questions or want to take a separate vote on anything on the consent calendar?
Not me.
Okay, very good. Before we have that motion, I had one on item B, which we did discuss in committee. I just wanted to make sure we had talked about putting some fencing around the area for the construction equipment. I just want to make sure that the contractee is going to do that.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, President Pauly. Per your feedback, we will have the contract install a screening around the perimeter as they set up for the use of that portion of the property. So we will be coordinating with the contractor accordingly. Absolutely.
Very good. So I have a motion on the floor by Director Slauson for F.
I'm sorry. Unless the board intends to make two separate motions, the motion for all items should be made by somebody else other than Director Swanson.
Yeah, we plan on doing two motions.
We'll take two votes. I'm good with two votes.
I'll second that motion.
So we have a second. So that's everything on the consent calendar for except for F and K. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Kerm?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. I will now go ahead and make a motion for items F and item K on the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Director Corona would like to second that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 3-0 with Director Slauson absent from the vote and Director Record absent from the meeting today. Thank you for that. We'll now go on to item 5, which is our action calendar. 5A is to adopt a proposed resolution for issuance of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as the legislative body for Community Facilities District 214-65, authorizing issuance of its 2022 special tax bonds and approving bond documents as to form. Mr. Hayes, good morning. Somewhere in this presentation, I hope you have a pun or a joke.
Pressure. I don't have one planned, but I'll try to stir one
up. If you can come up on the fly, okay?
Sure. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Apologies in advance. I have lost my voice, so I hope I don't lose the rest of it in the next two presentations.
In that case, we'll forgive the pun and joke, okay? We'll save them for next time.
I was going to tell you how I lost my voice, but I'll save that for next time. Anyways, I'm thankful for the opportunity to come before you today. The next two items are related to CFD bond issuances. This one is for CFD 2014-65 Menifee 2A859. CFD was formed in 2014 with a bonded indebtedness amount not to exceed $8 million for the purpose of financing district water and sewer improvements and improvements for both the city of Menifee and its school district. This CFD is located in Director Armstrong's division in the city of Menifee, approximately 1 mile west of the district's desalination facilities, as you could see in the picture in the bottom of this slide. The developer of this project is Woodside Homes, and it's being marketed as Skyview. The project contains approximately 50 gross acres and is planned for 161 single-family homes. An appraisal was performed by Kitty Sino and Associates, one of the district's approved appraisers. With the value date of July 11th, the appraised value was $66 million. Since the appraisal, there's been additional completed and sold homes, and the project is nearing completion. The appraised value results in a very healthy value-to-lien ratio of approximately 14-1. 53 parcels were levied in the prior tax year, and one of those had a delinquency, which brought the delinquency rate to 1.97%. An additional 55 homes were added to the levy this year, bringing the total to 108 parcels being submitted to the county last month during the tax levy enrollment period. The effective tax rate is estimated to be 1.8%. This will be the first and last bond issuance for this CFD, and future bond issuances would be for refunding purposes only. The financing team has been closely watching the market, and rates have since gone up since the preparation of the bottom table and are now inching above 5%. The par amount has been reduced to accommodate higher rates and is now projected to be $4.4 million, which will generate approximately $3.9 million in proceeds. The higher rates won't cost the taxpayers any additional money. It's just that the developer will receive slightly less in proceeds. Many members of the financing team have joined us here today. Just take a minute to introduce them. We have Anna Sarabian and Chelsea Redmond from Fieldman.
Thank you for being here.
Fieldman is the district's municipal advisor. We also have Heidi Sheppy from Webb, the district's special tax consultant.
Thank you, Heidi, for being here.
And we also have Renee Vancho from Piper Sandler, the underwriter selected for this bond sale. Also here with us today is Tracy Lee, our finance manager here at Eastern. I'd like to express my appreciation to the team for their commitment, effort, and support. As for the schedule, yesterday we wrapped up the due diligence meeting with the underwriter, the developer, and legal counsels for both parties, as well as our legal counsel. Today we are seeking board approval. We are hoping to have the POS posted tomorrow, and we're currently on schedule to price the bonds on September 28th, and the closing has been advanced by a week to October 13th. Staff recommends the board adopt the proposed resolution authorizing the issuance of the bonds in a principal amount not to exceed $6 million, approve the related documents, and authorize the district's executive team to provide the necessary services for the issuance of the bonds. I'm happy to answer any questions, as well as the financing team, if there are any for them.
Any questions for Thomas or the team? With that, I'll look for a motion and a second.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong.
I'll second it.
Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. We'll go on to item B, which is to adopt a proposed resolution for issuance of a board of directors of EMWD acting as the legislative body for the Community Facilities District 215-68, Washington Street, French Valley Acres, authorizing issuance of the 2022 special PAX bonds and approving bond documents as to form.
This is number 2 of 2. For CFD bond issues today, and believe it or not, I've been told I'm number 1 of 1, so for what it's worth, if you ask my mom, she will definitely agree that I'm her only son.
You got the joke in, even with losing your voice. That's dedication.
The CFD was formed in January 2015 with a bonded indebtedness amount not to exceed $5.1 million. CFD is located in President Pauley's division in French Valley. CFD was formed with two zones, though the bonds will be secured by special taxes of Zone 1 only. Zone 2 remains undeveloped at this time. The developer had originally planned to develop both zones, but geographic constraints of the area in Zone 2 prevented the developer from moving forward with the project, and they have since abandoned plans to develop the area. Zone 1 consists of 69 homes, which have all been completed and sold to homeowners. The most recently updated assessment value from the county is a healthy at $26.8 million. Despite the small size of the project, staff recommends moving forward with the bond issuance for this CFD due to several factors contributing to lower risk. The bonds will be sold via private placement, as it's cost-effective, and the interest rate has already been locked in. The reserve fund will be fully funded to maintain debt service in the event delinquencies create any cash flow issues. And the assessed value results in a value-to-lien ratio of over 22-1, very much surpassing the district's minimum requirement. Individual home ownership is 100%. And a full year of taxes have already been collected with zero reported delinquencies. The projected par amount is approximately $1.2 million, generating just over $1 million in proceeds. The true interest cost is 5.02%, and given the direction where rates are trending, this appears to be the right decision made at the time. Now, the same great financing team also concurrently worked on this project.
Are they going to get another shout-out? Or
just a minor one.
Okay.
In lieu of an underwriter selling the bonds, Western Alliance Business Trust has agreed to purchase the bonds. And Western Alliance has been a great partner of the district in years past on several private placement deals. Western Alliance's intent is to hold the bonds to maturity, but legally retains the right to assign or participate out in whole its interest in the bonds, but only to a qualified accredited investor or institutional buyer. If such event were to occur, Western Alliance would request EMWD to agree to such assignment or transfer. The schedule is rather straightforward. Staff recommends moving forward with this deal. The team has worked incredibly hard on both deals concurrently to achieve efficiencies in effort, scale, and monetary savings. Staff recommends the board adopt the proposed resolution, authorize the issuance of the bonds in an amount not to exceed $2 million, approve the trust indenture and the private placement lending parameters with Western Alliance, and authorize the executive team to execute the transaction. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on these? Seeing none, I will move the item.
I'll second.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
Thank you, the team. Great job, everybody, on those two. We'll move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize the San Jacinto Groundwater Sustainability Agency Plan Area 2022 Water Year Groundwater Monitoring Report and 2023 Calendar Year Groundwater Monitoring Program for an appropriation of $800,000.
Thank you.
Gray, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Today I'm going to present you with our West San Jacinto GSA Groundwater Monitoring Program. So we'll take a look at the location of the program, its components, our estimated 2023 budget, as well as our staff recommendation. So just to orient you, you see this figure showing the San Jacinto Groundwater Basin in its entirety. The outlined area in darker blue represents our West San Jacinto GSA plan area, and EMWD is the Groundwater Sustainability Agency responsible for sustainable management in this particular area. We have three adjudications in our basin. The eastern portion of our basin is adjudicated and managed by the Water Master, and there are two smaller adjudications, so the north, northwest and southern portion, just the Santa Margarita River watershed. You'll also see the major groundwater purveyors as well as some water infrastructure supply facilities, including our desalter and so on and so forth. So the components of our monitoring program, we collect annual water quality samples, semi-annual groundwater levels, monthly groundwater extractions. We also compile data that goes into preparation of our water budgets and change in groundwater and storage that we also use to report to DWR per SGMA. And so we collect precipitation, imported water data, as well as recycled water data. We also compile the information related to our water rights and reporting to the State Water Resources Control Board. We execute our canyon operating plan to ensure that the Saboba tribe is able to use their 3,000 acre feet per year water right in the canyon groundwater management zone. And we execute our North San Jacinto Initiative program with our dairies who receive raw water from EM1 connection. So another major program is our Paris II Reverse Osmosis Treatment Facility Monitoring and Reporting Program. This MRP was as a result of the grant funding we received for the Paris II desalter, and we do a barrage of water quality sampling to assess the vertical and lateral extent of the brackish water in the Lakeview and Paris South groundwater management zones related to TDS, nitrate, perchlorate, and PFAS. And that's a 20-year program. So we implement that and also report to the regional board and the state board. We also had submitted our groundwater sustainability plan to DWR in November of 2021, and right now we're in the implementation phase. Just to note that we haven't gotten any feedback from DWR and our GSB as of yet. They have 2 years to review the document, but we are in the implementation phase. So we're assessing our sustainability indicators. We're assessing the condition of our plan area relative to our representative monitoring points to ensure that the metrics that we set up, including our minimum thresholds and measurable objectives, we monitor that closely to ensure that the basin is not experiencing an undesirable result. We're also planning on monitoring wells that produce more than 2 acre feet. We're working on the executive order and a process for well permit review as a GSA, assessing domestic wells, especially related to areas in disadvantaged and severely disadvantaged communities, continuing to optimize our data management system and importing data, and having that data be accessible to our the public, as well as continued stakeholder outreach and engagement. So here's our estimated budget for 2023 and its components. So you'll see we're asking for a total of $802,300 to execute the program. And so our staff recommendation is to appropriate $127,100 to prepare the 2022 water year groundwater monitoring report, and appropriation of $675,200 to execute the 2023 calendar year groundwater monitoring program in our West San Jacinto GSA plan area, bringing the total appropriation to $802,300, and for us to execute general manager district standards form of contracts with the consultants and suppliers to execute the program.
All right. Any questions on this? Director Slauson.
Yeah, I don't have any questions on this. This is great. Something we have to continue to do. Do we know if there are wells that are not permitted? Maybe they were constructed, or do we suspect, or have we heard of that?
So we've been doing an assessment, Director Slauson, to assess sort of all the wells in our plan area. We've been using several databases, Riverside County Environmental Health, DWR. There are some locations that are sort of unknown in DWR where, you know, maybe like a long time ago, like 50 years or 70 years, there was a theoretical location, but there's no information necessarily. So it's hard to discern exactly what those records are. But we have since then found about 120 wells, known and unknown, and right now we have to sort of, our next step is boots on the ground to figure out if those wells are actually existing, you know, if they're extracting, how do we go about, you know, either getting permission, having the participant report to us, or we just estimate, just so that we have a good idea of how much production is going on in our plan area. So we're working through that right now. We have a really good record of the newer wells, but the older wells, it's a little bit suspect. So we're continuing to work on that.
Okay, I was just curious. Thank you.
And Rachel, if I can add, there are a number of wells in our service area that are no longer active. They were permitted at one point in time in the past, but currently they're not active. And some of them are actually used by us for monitoring purposes. So in terms of wells that are not permitted, they were permitted at one point, but are no longer, they've been abandoned essentially, but they still have a use in terms of monitoring the groundwater basin.
All right, thank you.
And then I just, go ahead, Director.
Well, I had a question. Front. So on that same subject, so you're as far as the DWR, you're not required to report anything less than 25 acre feet, as I understand. You may have a permit from the county when it was drilled, but they're not reporting that use under 25 acre feet. Is that?
So per SGMA, the cutoff is 2 acre feet now.
Okay.
So anything above 2 acre feet, we are required to at least understand the pumping and include that pumping, and we have several ways of trying to figure out, you know.
But that's reporting to you. That's not reporting.
And to DWR.
Okay.
And to DWR as well.
All right.
Yeah.
So I know we give all this information to DWR, but we also, this is publicly available. We put on our website, or somehow we share this with the public, correct?
Yeah, it's in our annual report, and we're currently working with PGA on a portal to be able to, yeah.
Because I know there's people doing research and other things, I think, like to get this data, and always, since we're, our ratepayers are paying for it, I want to make sure we have accessibility to it. So, Director,
recommendation.
Yes, Director Armstrong, any questions?
Just want to follow up on Director Crona's question. The 2 acre feet now for the private wells, are they going to be required to have a meter on their wells?
So Director Armstrong, the EMWD as a GSA, we have the authority to require metering, but we're not planning on forcefully, you know, implementing that. We're going to try to work cooperatively with the well owner, and if they're not planning on allowing us to install a meter, then maybe report their usage to us on an annual basis. And if not, we can estimate their usage based on land use, size, and type.
So, okay.
So to clarify, Dr. Armstrong, we're not enforcing and we're not requiring a meter, but we are asking those well owners to report usage, essentially.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
All right. If there are no other questions, I will look for a motion and a second on this. The motion by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you very much for the presentation this morning. We will now move on to item D, which is to approve and authorize an amendment to extend the Murrieta Window Area Annexation Agreement between Metropolitan, Western, and Eastern. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. On September 15, 1999, the board approved execution of a four-party agreement between Metropolitan Water District, Western Municipal Water District, the former Murrieta County Water District, as well as EMWD. The Murrieta County Water District and the area immediately surrounding it was not annexed into MWD and relied on groundwater to provide potable water service to its customer. The subject agreement that is up for consideration today, or the amendment to that agreement, provided for a streamlined fringe area annexation process of the Murrieta window area to Metropolitan. The parties assumed that development within the subject area would occur over a 25-year agreement term, with current and future property owners requiring a municipal water service. That agreement currently expires on December 14th, 2024, and only about 50% of the area is currently annexed. Based on that agreement, that streamlined fringe area annexation process consisted of one application to Metropolitan and LAFCO for the 5.8 square mile Murrieta window area, which is comprised of 1,153 parcels. This non-standard process addressed all administrative aspects of a fringe area annexation and deferred collection of Met's standard process, and addressed all of these administrative and the most costly part of the annexation process until all the property owners required service. That administrative and financial advantage of this approach included elimination of hundreds of individual annexation requests as municipal water service was needed, and also represented a significant time savings for each of the parties. There also was the benefit of ratepayer-developer cost savings with the one application to Metropolitan and LAFCO, again representing hundreds of thousands of dollars in cost savings. In 2000, Metropolitan administratively annexed the area west of I-215 and I-15, reaching to the Santa Rosa foothills. EMWD's portion of the aforementioned area is relatively small when compared to the total Murrieta window area, and also the fact that Western has now absorbed the Murrieta County Water District. As I previously mentioned, only about half of the subject area is has developed, which leaves half of the area per acre charge still unpaid. There are three provisions regarding payment that can be considered at this point. One is going ahead and paying all the fees for the non-eligible area, financing the payment of these fees according to mutually agreeable terms, and exploring other options. That third option allows EMWD to retain capital by eliminating the need to immediately or defer payments to Metropolitan. And that third option includes extending the agreement to December 14th, 2034, again, allowing development and infill within the subject area and property owners submitting Metropolitan's per acre charge payment to the respective retail agency. So this morning, what we're asking is for board's authorization to approve and authorize the general manager to execute an amendment extending the term of the original Murrieta window area annexation agreement between Metropolitan, Western Municipal Water District, and EMWD. And with that, I'll take any questions.
And President Pauly, if I can add, I'm very pleased that Metropolitan has agreed to extend this agreement by another 10 years. As Linnea mentioned, it is somewhat unique of an arrangement. Metropolitan doesn't typically have these types of arrangements. So we're pleased that they have agreed to extend this agreement to not only us, but also to Western. And in talking to the general manager at Western, they are planning on having this item go forward to their board today for Western's consideration. So I'm just, as I said, I'm really pleased where things have landed on this issue with Metropolitan.
And this has been before the Met board, correct?
It's been reviewed by Met staff. I'm not certain it needs to go to the Met board. It may be administratively processed, but I can confirm that, President Pauly, and get back to you.
I just want to make sure we're all tightened up. And then you, Director Slauson, a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think that this is a good agreement for the property owners. I remember John Burdeen saying we'd probably have to revisit this, and I'm predicting in 2034 I'll probably recommend approval.
Director Slauson is showing his longevity on the Eastern Board, which is
future,
which we appreciate very much. I just want to check, Director Armstrong, any questions on this item?
No questions. I think this is a great outcome as well.
It is moved by the Dean of the Eastern Board, second by Director Corona. Megan, roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you very much. Why don't we go ahead and take about a 7 or 8 minute break before we continue on with the presentations.
That's where it is.
All right. We are going to reconvene our meeting. We are on to informational item presentations. Laura, you're going to do workforce development and succession plan.
Well, I'm going to do the introduction.
You're going to do the introduction.
And
we're
going to
have
our
new
director.
Able HR manager come up and do it. Okay.
So President Pauly and members of the board, we're very excited to bring this item forward, informational item on our workforce development and succession plan. This is part of our strategic planning, one of our strategic planning objectives in our current triennial, and it was a hot topic in our general manager's evaluation, and it's a very important topic. We had over 30 retirements last year. We've had many this year, and it is, you know, just like any other agency, it's upon us, and we really need to have a more global effort. We do a lot of great things that Joe's going to go over in dealing with succession planning, but we really think we need an overall plan. Joe and I have been very involved in this, and all of our directors have had an overview. So it's going to be a district-wide effort. It's not just human resources handling this. This is a very big initiative for the district and a very important one. And so for that, I'm going to turn it over to our HR director, Joe Opris, to walk through the presentation.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me up here again. I guess today was not the Tom and Jerry show, but the Tom and Joe show, since Thomas had some, and Joe has some more to present here. So thank you again.
If you want to do occasional pun or joke, it's always welcome. So, but you have some large shoes to fill if you're going to take on Thomas, okay?
I do, so I'll have to work on it, and we'll have some in the future. But as Laura said, our strategic plan charges us to attract, retain high-performing individuals by creating and sustaining a work culture that is safe, ethical, innovative, inclusive, diverse, and that provides ample opportunities for development and advancement. And with this, we strive for workforce excellence by expanding and developing programs to recruit and retain highly qualified, diverse, and productive employees. Yes, thank you. So with that, our job is not just to provide water for today, but to provide water and reliable supplies for the future. And to successfully do that, this requires an excellent workforce with employees who are fully prepared to meet future needs and challenges. And succession planning prepares us for the future, prepares our leaders, and to ensure a stable, professional, and fully trained workforce. This chart over here shows our total filled positions. It dates back to 2008, and our total authorized positions. And as you can see, the past few years, there's been a gap of filling those positions, and many, as Laura mentioned, retirements have happened over the years, and as time has gone by, we're trying to make sure that we have a workforce that is still sustainable through that. Here's some of the statistics that show our separations. So just last year, we had 34 retirements. We had, in addition to that, 18 additional resignations and then 4 involuntary resignations. At this point this year, we have 13 retirements, and this number is going to rise by the end of the year. We also have 13 separations, voluntary resignations, and then 4 involuntary as well. The chart below that is the number of employees who are eligible to retire by year. So don't get frightened and think, oh, wow, we have 62 people who retired this year or are going to. This eligibility is based off of the age and requirements by CalPERS. So they've met that requirement of years of service as well as the age. And this is how many people we have eligible in 2022 to retire. Now, that doesn't mean they're all going to retire this year. So that means that some of these numbers will shift and will continue to go into the following years, into 2023, 2024. And as you can see, in 2035, we have 84 people who will be eligible for retirement.
Can I just inject, and I say, Director Slauson, I know you'll still be here at that point. Probably will not be, but if you want to handle that large
recently
number.
Recently re-elected again.
Recently re-elected again, that large number, we'll leave it in your hands.
I'll be prepared for it now. Okay.
Great. And we'll work on it together. I want to talk about what succession planning is. So succession planning is a process to identify and develop potential future leaders or senior managers, as well as individuals to fill other positions critical to an organization, either in the short term or long term. So there's something that we currently are doing, and I'll talk about this on the next slide, as well as replacement planning at this point. And this identifies short-term replacements. It's a tactical thing to make sure that, you know, we stop gap measurement, that we're looking to fill the current roles that are really needed. With succession planning, it's more of a long term. It focuses on talent development, getting people ready to step up, to be ready, you know, having a strong bench, and it's strategic. So what are we doing now? So currently, we're doing this replacement planning, making sure we fill, you know, as somebody, a position becomes vacant, we fill that. We have promotional opportunities that our employees are able to progress through. We have employees who just retired this year who have gone through 30 years of progression. Leadership coaching, online and classroom training that provide management and supervisory skills. We had to stop that a little bit during COVID, but we're going to be starting it up again in January 2023. Internships and apprenticeships. It just happened that, you know, the presentation of the interns happened today, and we're talking about this as well, which is a good to have that together. We also have technical certification that when employees start to work with us, they get different certifications that help them advance and progress in their positions as well. A tuition reimbursement that we offer employees to go and get education. And also we have a diversity, equity, and inclusion incorporated into our workforce development programs and efforts as well. What do we need and want to do going forward? So what we would like is to incorporate what we are doing now with additional best practices into a comprehensive succession plan program. So this is something that we're looking at to make into a program. You know, different companies like Apple, Microsoft, MWD, they have programs. They have, you know, Apple has something called Apple University. We're not at that point yet, but why can't we get there to a point where we have programs for our employees to develop? Something that is also a pathway and is communicated to employees. We have all these great things that are happening, but they're kind of their standalone programs. So if we could put something together that really identifies a pathway for employees to really be able to reach out and look at, I think it would be very helpful as well. So some of the succession planning proposed policy principles, we would like to implement a succession plan program that ensures business continuity without interruption, preserve and expand institutional knowledge, invest in staff development to provide leadership and growth opportunities, develop a program that provides feedback to continuously evaluate our succession planning efforts, and a commitment by the organization's leaders to actively implement succession planning activities. Our approach, we have a short-term goals, we have long, mid-term, and long-term. So it's broken up into 3 different categories. So our short-term, we want to form an internal succession planning work group to lead the charge. So as Laura said, we want there to be champions, not just in HR. We want leadership to take this on and fully embrace it, because if we don't have the buy-in of leadership, this will just be a plan and won't turn into a program. We want to review organizational charge to ensure career paths are clear and available. This is something we have been doing and we currently are doing, and we're going to continue to do in the future. Identify key positions that we need to determine which ones will, you know, is there going to be a gap in services if all of a sudden somebody retires or leaves in this position? We also want to identify a potential pool of successors. So we're looking at different individuals to, you know, not just one individual who could potentially do that, but we have a pool and we have a strong bench. We want to evaluate leadership coaching and training programs currently offered. We also want to involve management in the succession planning efforts and evaluate the need for consulting services to assist in the effort to ensure best practices. So the consulting services is there's twofold. We also want to be sure we are being provided the best practices moving forward, doing what we need to do in a succession plan to make sure that it turns into a program. But we're also looking for some help and efforts. HR has been going through a huge transition, and this year we already have 5 out of the 7 people in HR who are brand new to our department, which we're trying to get our feet in there and trying to understand how everything flows at EMWD. So there's going to be some efforts in providing assistance to our department to ensure that we move forward with the best practices. Our midterm goals are to determine when potential successors will be ready, identify training and development opportunities for potential successors, establish a process to transfer knowledge in advance of employees exiting, whether it mean they're resigning, whether it mean they're retiring, whatever advance notice we can get, we're going to try to put in a program to transfer that knowledge through mentoring, job shadowing, stretch assignments, also creating some standard operating procedure guidebooks that would help somebody else who's coming into the position. We also want to ensure that managers are continuously reviewing their organizational structure to ensure that they're ready for ongoing succession. Long-term goals will be to evaluate and streamline the recruitment process. So we want to look and make sure that there's a clear path for internal employees for promotions as what they need to do. But we're also looking to make sure we have key networking with external individuals as well and corporations to bring people in if we need to bring them externally. We also want to build on the succession plan to an overall workforce management program, as I mentioned. So we wanted to make sure that there's a clear understanding that from onboarding through retirement, there's a potential for some type of succession. So our next steps, our immediate steps, are to create a work group to lead the development of the plan, contract with a consulting firm for project assistance, and also evaluate the career paths, which we're currently doing this and with certain classifications already, and also provide quarterly updates to the board so that we can ensure we're progressing in this and not just staying in a stagnant plan. So any questions, comments?
And President Paul, if I can add before we open up for questions, this is obviously a very important initiative for me personally and for the entire senior executive team. As far as I'm aware, the district has not had in the past a formal succession program. There's been various efforts over the years, but to my knowledge, this is the first time the district would embark on a formal succession program. Recently, I held a all-hands meeting with all the staff of the district to update them on various issues. This issue came up. I can tell you there's a lot of interest by staff as far as what this would entail, what does it mean. So I was really pleased to share with them our vision of going forward with this initiative. So part of this will be to come back to the board on a regular basis and provide regular updates as far as how we're doing. But I just want you to be aware this is a very high priority effort for me and for the rest of the senior executive team.
All right. Let's open it up for any questions or discussions. Director Slauson.
Yeah, I think it's something we have to do, and I appreciate the work that's being done. But you mentioned diversity, equity, and inclusion incorporated in everything that you're doing. And that just reminded me, I had to fill out a form recently with an organization I belong to. And it asked you to state what you identify publicly as, straight, gay, transsexual, whether you're disabled, not disabled. And I've had a chance to talk to a couple of family members that are gay and a couple that are disabled. And it's kind of awkward. I think it might be fraught with danger. I don't know if we go that far, asking people to out themselves. So, especially with the disabled, because they're, you know, it's a physical thing. It's definitely one thing or another, typically. I mean, 99% of the time. But you may not want to identify as having MS. Probably.
Correct.
And here you're being asked to fill out this form. with this organization you belong to. How are we handling that?
Yeah, so there's always should be an option of not, you know, wanting to share. So you would have how you identify yourself. So we wouldn't force someone to identify as anything at this point. We would always give an option as a NA or a choose not to identify. And that's even on our applications currently as, you know, people apply for positions. There are certain identifiers, and that really helps us to gather that information, though, to look at the demographics, to find out, you know, certain areas where we might need a little bit more help, or we might need to look at our certain things, you know, in population. You know, are we 70% male and only 30% female in our workforce, and how do we recruit in different areas? So it is a helpful tool for us in HR, but at the same time, people could choose not to identify certain things, and that will always be the option. We won't force somebody to just straight out make, you know, a statement and identify a certain characteristic or class.
Okay, and I appreciate that. I would just add that it puts the person in an awkward position stating, I don't want to stay either. It's like, why doesn't he or she want to stay? What's going on? Yeah. So it's kind of, I don't know. I mentioned it to this HR person someplace else, and they said, yeah, it can be dangerous.
It can
really be careful.
Right, and that's why we do have to be careful and give different options. So, yeah.
And on that subject, Dorcas Lawson, just maybe some other considerations. I agree that often looking at the data, looking at the statistics of an organization helps understand better how we have performed overall relative to diversity, equity, inclusion. But I think more importantly, the objective is to continue providing an equal opportunity for all. And there are certain measures that we have undertaken and we will continue to undertake to make sure we have an equal opportunity for all. For example, a very diverse interview panel, selection panel, so that the panel is well represented in terms of gender or otherwise. But beyond that, once you have diversity and you're able to increase diversity in your workforce, the inclusion aspect is to make sure that the culture at the organization is welcoming, so people feel they belong. Because if there's a culture of certain biases, then people will look for somewhere else to work. So it's all those things. I think we have made significant strides over the years, but you know, we've had those discussions, and we've had those discussions how we can continue to include diversity, equity, inclusion. But the one thing I wanted to say is the bottom line when it comes to selection of an employee or promotion of an employee, the best qualified individual will get the promotion or the job. That is the golden rule, irrespective of their diversity or other criteria. If we break that rule, it undermines the credibility of the entire system. So my direction has always been to staff is the best qualified individual will always be offered a promotion or be selected for a job.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I understand the need for the DEI mindset. I was just specifically speaking the one little forum, and it really just seemed like, and I talked, the other people I talked to thought, yeah, I'd feel a little awkward filling that out because I might not be public with something or with my disability or whatever it might be. That's all.
Director Corona?
Yeah, I think this is really important to start figuring out how we're going to replace these folks that are going to go. And I think earlier today we saw an perfect example of that with our great interns. So I think we need to continue the internship and, in fact, improve on that and increase that, and then figure out how we're going to get new people in here and keep this place as good as it already is.
Director Armstrong.
Yes, thank you. I think this is a great plan and certainly needed, and I think you did a really good job of laying it out. Really like the short term and the midterm and the long term and the strategic versus the tactical. I think just did a really good job with that, and really appreciate our general manager's comments that he just made. I totally agree with that as well, and I think one of the things that you highlighted in your PowerPoint was leadership coaching. And I think that's just so critical as you have these great employees doing a great job and they advance up through an organization. They really need that leadership coaching to really help them be successful in the next the next steps that they take. So I'm glad that that's included in there. Thank you.
Thank you. So I had two quick ones here, and it's kind of as we recruit, it's a different world than I think in the past you had people that would come to a public water agency because they wanted a stability of their job. They want a good retirement, good benefits. I don't think we have been in my time and even in Director Slauson's time, I don't think we've ever laid anybody off here. We went through 2008. We didn't lay a single person off. So there was a lot of stability, and that I think used to be why people would come here. As I talk to some younger folks in the workforce, they now want to come here because they want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I want to just say that, you know, especially making a difference in my community, making a difference in the environment. Well, you know, I hope we market to new employees. We are probably the premier environmental agency in this area. We make sure we have clean water. We make sure we clean up water that needs to be cleaned up, and we reuse it as recycled water. So I hope that's part of our recruiting, and I don't know what your thoughts on that are, that we do make a difference in the environment here.
I agree with that statement. I think that's something we're going to have to push out, and we have been through our recruitment efforts. And as we look to some other areas to help us with recruiting to fill positions, that's something we're going to push as well.
Very good. So the other thought I had is every kind of younger person, including us, some of non-younger people, this device is very important to them.
Yes.
They think the world comes through a screen on their phone. So with virtual work, how are we in an agency? There's a lot of folks that work for Matt over here that cannot work virtually because they're in the field doing things. How are you as our HR director going to figure out what the balance on that is, or any thoughts on that of how to talk about virtual work versus I need to be in the field or I need to be at a meeting in person?
That's a great question. I don't think I can give you a specific answer right now. It requires more thought, but I have been thinking about it just because the world is changing and there is a lot of different positions that are virtual. There's also a lot of different positions that you need to be in the field. You can't be virtual, but I think EMWD is at the forefront right now of a lot of agencies not even having the opportunity to work from home, and we have a program in place that has a policy that allows our employees. So I think at the other end of that, we're going to have to assess and do more assessment, look into the individuals who aren't able to do that and see potentially what can come forward for that.
And President Pai, I would add, I think as you indicated, the key here as an organization is to be nimble and to evolve as the conditions in the workforce evolve. So as Joe mentioned, it's been just under a year since we deployed our work-from-home arrangement for office employees that allows them up to potentially 2 days a week to work from home. It's been a good program so far. We haven't had any major hurdles, but it is a pilot, and we will continue to assess that program. I think to your point, as far as operation staff, there are a number of folks who work in the operation and maintenance staff that are essentially administrators or office employees who do take advantage of the work-from-home arrangement. But for the field employees, there's other programs. I know some of the crews work 410s, if I'm not mistaken, Matt. So there are some flexibilities. I think the underlying approach is just to be nimble and to understand the changing, evolving expectations of the workforce and to be able to evolve with that. So we're going to continue doing so, but I think, again, to Joe's point, we are a leader in this space in terms of the work from home that we established. But I also want to mention that very recently, as the board is aware, we identified a work group, the call center, that we determined can work entirely from home, and we're in the process of fully deploying that plan. So we're continuously evolving and responding to the changing conditions, but what we want to make certain is that our customers continue to be served at the highest level as they have been for many years. We cannot in any way, shape, or form undermine that level of service, and that's been my direction to the entire team, is we always want to make sure we keep our eye on the ball. Thank you.
I agree. We are life sustaining here. Okay, if we're not functioning correctly, if our water systems and our sewer systems aren't functioning correctly, it's a whole different 24 hours in people's lives. So it's important. I'm glad we have you on board.
Thank you.
I look forward to the ideas that we have. I think we are recognizing it's a changing world out there. We have to adjust accordingly, but I'm glad we're taking a look at this. So thank you very much.
I do have one more thing.
Yes, sir.
Just a silly question. Have you had anybody quiet quitting yet? Which I've read about.
I don't know if people come out with that. But
they don't admit it.
We, no.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know until a project fell behind. Or
right, right.
We have performance measures for every employee. We track that very closely, and if there are issues, we diligently address performance issues.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Appreciate
thank you very much.
It. Thank you. And our final information item today is an assessment of financial participation charges for commercial development projects. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauley.
I'm looking forward to hearing on this one.
Yeah, members of the board. They're pleased to present this item. There has been some recent interest by the board with respect to commercial development projects and related fee assessments. So that's really the genesis of this presentation. First, I'll start with some background as to what development services does. As shown, development services staff is involved in the full gamut of development project processing, including land entitlement, business clearances, new facilities and connections, as well as fee assessments and collections. Just for reference, I wanted to highlight our fee revenue totaled $75.2 million in fiscal year 22 and $68.7 million in fiscal year 21, which is up dramatically. Post-COVID, our historic average is about $45 to $60 million annually. Also, development services processes a wide variety of developments. Project types, residential, both single-family and multifamily residential, commercial projects such as retail, restaurants, hospitality, office, warehousing and logistics, institutional, such as schools and medical facilities, and even industrial development projects. Although 85% of our FPC revenues are from residential development, commercial project related services comprise a significant work component in development services. So what are financial participation charges, or FPCs? All project developers pay financial participation charges as part of their new connections and or changes in use, such as tenant improvements. The intent of the FPC is growth pays for growth. And our policy principles. The calculation methodologies for water and sewer FPCs are different. For water, the basis of that unit is the equivalent meter size. For sewer, the equivalent dwelling unit is used. And for sewer, there are approximately 50 tenant-type factors that are used to assess and apply respective project uses. Those tenant type factors were recently rebased, recalibrated, and updated in 2018 as part of a board adopted study. In addition, special benefit area surcharges are sometimes established for certain special financing related circumstances. Some examples of that are the Temecula Old Town Sewer, Temecula Wine Country Sewer, the Northern San Jacinto Sewer, just to name a few. The 2021 EMWD FPC study rebased the FPC amounts, which became effective January 1st of 2022. They're identified on this table.
Corey, can we clarify something on this table? The water financial participation charge is typically what a single family residential connection would pay. That's not necessarily additive with a landscape water financial participation charge. Can you clarify that point?
Sure. Yeah. On the water financial participation charge, that $68.45 per EMS is for a domestic meter. It does include a fire flow component in that. If there are projects like a multifamily project that has a separate landscape meter, that's the 6214, and that is minus the component related to fire flow. This table was also presented in the 2021 FPC study, and it shows how EMWD's FPCs compare to its neighboring agencies. So we're somewhere in the middle there. And this illustration provides a comparative order of magnitude of both water and sewer FPC amounts for common development project examples. Includes residential projects as well as several commercial projects and even a high school. Some considerations for such non-residential FPC assessments include the higher granularity for non-residential projects, and as previously mentioned, we have approximately 50 sewer tenant types. So we do look at the type of use of a non-residential project to identify what those specific impacts are and the corresponding fees. Also, FPC payments, they run with the property and are not portable to a specific tenant, leasing tenant. And a new tenant can gain benefit from previous FPC payments paid by another tenant if the use is such that the new tenant's impacts are higher than they would pay the difference between what had been paid previously and what they intend to do with this particular
Can I stop
project.
And ask a question
sure.
right there, Court? So, for example, if I was going to open a laundromat or something, I probably would want to choose a building that may have been a laundromat before or, I don't know, a restaurant, something that had larger discharge. Is
yes.
that what you're kind of saying here?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
No. So to your point, President Pauly, the capacity is retained with the property. It does not move around with the tenants. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. If someone wanted to open up a business that is anticipated to generate a higher sewer flow, they should be looking for a property that has that capacity associated with it. And there are such properties, commercial properties, as you mentioned. Former restaurant sites are often associated with larger sewering discharge capacity.
And so, Corey, if I came in and met with you, and you would let me know that and give me some suggestions on things that might be more suitable for my businesses. That what I hear?
Yeah, and we could even look at if there was addresses provided, identify what has been paid in the past on these particular locations.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent service that we provide.
Thank you. Lastly, I just wanted to identify what our staff as well as the land agency jurisdictions, we try to prepare new applicants, you know, for this FPC payment, which in some cases are substantial. And we provide outreach materials to educate the applicant on the purpose of the FPC, the calculation methodologies, and other related information. So that's handed out to these applicants that are inquiring. With that, I would be happy to take any questions.
So, President Pauly, if I can add a couple more things for consideration, and thank you, Corey. This was a
thank
very
you. Great presentation, Corey.
Very helpful presentation. I just wanted to indicate that our policies and practices relative to assessment and collection of connection fees is very much consistent with the industry. In fact, all of our neighboring agencies and all the agencies that we check to in the industry utilize a very consistent approach in terms of assessing and collecting connection fees. We do look at our connection fees, the figures that Corey showed earlier on a regular basis. In fact, last year, the board did adopt new connection fees based on our anticipated investments in our infrastructure as well as the capacity that would be gained. So we do look at that figure on a regular basis. We also look at the tenant type factors. We understand conservation has an impact on the amount of discharge into the sewer system. And in 2018, we did do an exhaustive study that updated the tenant flow factors, including some of the commercial tenant types that Corey referred to, including laundromats. We updated that figure, recognizing that laundromats currently are using higher efficiency machines, thus they're reducing their discharge into the sewer system. So I just wanted the board to be aware that we update this information on a regular basis. It's not static, and it's not just sitting on a shelf somewhere. We look at it, and we update it accordingly. Thank you.
Oh. Any other questions on this? Director Armstrong, any questions?
No questions for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Corey, very much.
With being the last person for information, I do want to, if I can,
please
be a little off script, put a plug to the succession planning effort that's going on. It's kind of near and dear to my heart. I am on that list that was identified there. And just some fun facts. You know, I know we like to get a little humor in when we can. This month in 1989, so 33 years ago, I started at EMWD. So I am a product of many of the programs that are you know, offered here, such as the scholarship, tuition reimbursement, the leadership program, and very appreciative of the opportunity. I am 55. I've worked at EMWD for 22 years. 11 at Rancho, so there's a lot of like doubles in there, you know, with the numbering. I just can't. I didn't think of anything for 44. I was thinking if I retired in 44 days, but that no. That was all. I just wanted to.
I hope say you're that. Not retiring in 44 days.
I appreciate your service here. Second, you are giving Thomas a run for the money today.
This is comedy club today, isn't it? Everyone's got a joke.
I do appreciate that. And I do. Again, I'll get back to it. I hope we talk to some people that have been here a long time to find out what the secret sauce is for keeping people. I mean, in today's world, people being places 20, 30 years is becoming unusual. So I do appreciate you adding that in at the end there. So.
I started in the mailroom.
All right. That's a great place to start.
If I could add one thing, Corey, I remember when I first got here, you were here, and then you abandoned us. I remember that. That's all I'm saying.
Well, as a recipient at Rancho of the abandonment, I'm very appreciative of Corey coming over for a while because one of the few people I really knew before I came here to Eastern. So, anyway.
Basically, Corey, what you're saying is our directors just kind of follow you around.
That's right.
Is that we're going to end? All right. We will move on to our receive and file items. I'm going to make the motion to receive and file our various reports. Director Corona would like to second that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. It is now time for our calendar review. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I have two events for your consideration today. One is on Thursday, October 13th. It is the City of San Jacinto hosting their State of the City address. And the other one is Saturday, October 15th, and it's EMWD hosting their open house here at the district. So the information is in your calendar review packet. On page 2 is the Board Master's meetings and events over the next 2 weeks. Please review this information and let me know if you have any changes. On the top of page 3 is the upcoming conferences and events with the participants. We have on Thursday, September 29th, the Boy Scouts Distinguished Citizen Gala will be taking place. And on Thursday, October 13th as well, is the Lands and Rivers Conservancy Gala as well. And then October 20th, which is a Thursday, is the State of the City address for the City of Menifee. And then lastly, I added in there Tuesday, November 29th is the beginning of the Aqua Fall Conference in Indian Wells. So all of this information with the Aqua preliminary agenda is in the back of your calendar packet.
Can I make a quick one on the Boy Scouts? I appreciate us doing that. I know I've been working with April. We have a couple scouting families. As you know, I'm very involved in scouting. We have a couple scouting families here that April is inviting to sit at our table. But if any of the directors would like to attend, I'd love to have them. I think we have a couple seats left on that. So very good.
No problem. So, and continuing on page 3 is the board and board committee meeting scheduled over the next 3 months. Please take note that we did change the board executive committee to this upcoming Wednesday, September 28th at 8:30 in the morning. So on the top of page 4 is the interagency meeting scheduled through November, and they are all currently on schedule. And then EMWD's offices will be closed through November on the 11th, the 24th, and the 25th in observance of those holidays. So are there any questions or comments regarding the calendar review? That concludes my report.
Very good. Thank you very much. Nice job as usual. We will go on to a director's attendance report. So we'll start with Director Armstrong.
Yes, so I attended the, I guess it's the ribbon cutting at the solar facility, at the reclamation facility, and my observation there was that was really clean. I've seen a lot of solar facilities that there's weeds and stuff growing, and this facility was just pristine, so it looked really nice. Attended the Paris Water Ad Hoc Committee. That was with staff to review the results of the financial model and analysis, and just the staff has done a tremendous job completing pretty much all of the analysis on this, and I know we're going to be discussing this, the results of that, in October with the ad hoc committee with the city of Paris, but I think in the meantime, our staff is going to be meeting with Paris staff to review all those results and see where we end up, but anyway, it's just a great job on that, and I think we're at a point where we kind of know some pathways forward on that, so I know that will come back to the full board shortly. And attended the City of Paris Council meeting with Amanda Fine, and she provided a great drought update to the city. She also went over some of the water use efficiency programs that are available to customers, so she did a really good job with that. And I did not attend the CalDSAL meeting, so that one I was not at. That's my update.
All right, very good. Thank you so much. Director Corona.
Yes, I attended the ribbon cutting ceremony also. The Ranch California Water District board meeting, I gave a little presentation on our efforts on the fire. Murrieta Rotary attended that with Roxanne. Roxanne gave a presentation on the drought, and we both answered questions from the crowd. Very good questions. Sewer service meeting, met with Corey, talked about things going on down in the Southern Wine Country area, and the Los Alamos Hills financing meeting with district staff, and that was informative as well. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much for that. I did attend the Winchester Municipal Advisory Committee, got to speak and answer some questions. Again, a lot of interest in the drought, a lot of interest in Winchester on the development that's coming in. So that's, again, a very engaged community in our service area. WRCOG, I attended that meeting. And Director Denstedt and I had a chance to talk a little afterwards, and probably in January, February, we'd love for Joe and Greg to come and kind of do an RCOG drought update. I think might be interesting. Had a good meeting with the general manager, Los Alamos Hills financing meeting. Again, appreciate that very much. That is a community that we want to get taken care of. But as always, there's a financial consideration, all of that, and I think we have a a pretty good plan going forward. EMWD Western had some good presentations at that meeting. Temporary meter construction, as Joe mentioned is in his report, Director Record and I had a meeting with him on that. More to come. I know we're probably all getting questions about that. One of the suggestions that I had, if we could execute, is I know we're very successful when ag's using recycled water. If a construction site's using recycled water, I'd like to get some sort of signage or banner out there just to let the public know, because I've had the questions. I have a lot of construction going on down in French Valley where I live, and I've had people in the community ask me, well, if we're in a drought, why are these water trucks out here spraying water all over the place? And so it's a timely issue, and I think it's one we probably need to review our policies on. So I appreciate Joe's leadership on that. Orange County Water Summit, I was not able to attend, unfortunately. And then Monday night, I was at Valleywide Park and Rec. Kevin and I gave a drought update. Again, I just want to really appreciate our relationship with Valleywide. It is a good working partnership. They're excited that we're going to hopefully in the next 18 months add a couple more schools and parks on our recycled system. So that's my report. Director Slauson.
Yes, I went over to the ribbon cutting on the 7th with, I think, a couple other directors, Corona and Armstrong. Attended a presentation. Nick was giving us the details of the Paris financial model. Attended the Sunnymead Ranch HOA presentation by staff on water conservation, some of the available reimbursement and conservation measures available. Attended the meeting with Western, the joint meeting, discussed concerns affecting both districts. Did not attend El Grito on the, yesterday I attended SAPA. The primary discussion was the funding for Prop 1, Stage 2 funding for disadvantaged communities and other projects. I also attended the Business in Action on the 14th at the Chamber of Commerce meeting, and the primary speaker presentation was the Director of Emergency Services for the city. And I don't know if we do work with them at all, but I imagine we do coordinate. And I also attended the another Sunmead Ranch HOA meeting. Amanda Fine and a consultant on our conservation program did a presentation to all of the HOA members, not just the board members, but just anyone who wanted to log on. And that was an expanded presentation. And that did very well. She did very well. And I think that's it. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Do we have any directors' closing comments or future agenda items you might want to see on an agenda? Director Armstrong, any closing comments?
None for me, thanks.
Very good. So, Mr. Legal Counsel, I understand we have a couple of closed session items.
Okay, thank you, Director Pauly, members of the board. There are two items that the board will consider in closed session. The first one is potential litigation, one case under Government Code 54956.9. The second one is labor negotiations update, with the agency representatives being the general manager, Laura Nomura and Nick Nettis. Employee organization, IBEW Local 1436, under 54957.6.
Very good. Can I ask the secretary to prepare us for closed session?
Yes.
And President Pauly, if I could, the first closed session item we can take up in this room, but if possible, for the second item, I'd like to meet in the conference room.
Okay, perfect.
If that's possible.
I will ask our board secretary to take care of all those arrangements for us. We reconvene into open session. All right. We are back in open session. Martin, would you be able to report out the closed session items, please?
Thank you, President Pauly, board members. Board considered two items in closed session. On the first one, there was a reportable action, and that is that the board authorized the funding and execution of a settlement agreement with Kiewit Construction Company resolving claim COR 237.2. On the second item, there were no reportable actions taken by the board. Thank you.
Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until Wednesday, October 5th at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.